Good morning. I'm Dr. Verdi, the host of WPKN Seeking Wellness Radio, Our Bodies Explained. We are a live broadcast on the fourth Saturday of every month from 9 to 10 a.m. In this series, we explore the science behind using natural medicine to support our health. Just a note for all of our listeners today, should you plan to make any changes to your health routine inspired by today's episode, be sure to get clearance from your medical provider. Just talk it over with them and make sure it's okay. I hope that all of your New Year's have been off to a good start. I can't believe January is already over. But today's episode is going to be on the thirst-quenching topic of hydration. So the past few episodes have been on different aspects of our lifestyles that help to build what I call the foundation of our health. So in November, we talked about gratitude, which is a really important mindset to have to improve our mood and, as we learned, different aspects of our physical bodies. And then in December, we talked about sleep and how important sleep is for our metabolism, our immune system. And we talked about the importance of having a healthy sleep routine and how to get more sleep throughout the night. So I thought, why not keep up with this theme of the foundation of our health and talk about the importance of hydration, or how I like to put it, watering yourself. So this is a call-in show, and if you're thirsty for answers, I'm overly excited with the water puns, and it's going to continue for the rest of the show. But if you're thirsty for answers, please feel free to call in with your questions. The number to call in is 203-336-9756. So I think there are a few facts that we all learned as we were young kids. I'm sure that everybody's played the game of, if you're stranded on a desert island, what are the three things that you would want to make sure you had access to? And I feel like as we grow up, we start thinking about that question more critically. And eventually we realize that access to water would be essential in that situation. So if we were in a scenario where we didn't have access to any food or water over a period of days and we needed to choose between food or water for our bodies, for our survival, it would be critical to choose water because we can rapidly die of dehydration over a period of days, whereas our bodies can survive hunger for extended periods of time because we store energy in the form of fat and protein. So if we were to not be able to have food for 1 to 3 days, our body would start recruiting our muscle and our fat in order to keep up the energy that we need to breathe, think, stay alive. We also require regular sources of water to help support our bodies on a cellular level. So on the basic, tiniest level, and then also on a systemic level to support all of the different systems in our bodies, from our digestive system to our musculoskeletal system to our nervous system and our brain. So the second fact that I think we all know is that our bodies are roughly 70% water. And infants actually are 75% water, whereas adults are roughly 55% water. So as we've learned in previous episodes of Seeking Wellness Radio, humans are composed of roughly 10% of human DNA and 90% of bacterial DNA. And today we're learning that we're actually 70% water. So we're pretty much our own walking, talking ecosystems. I always imagine the combination of bacteria and water always makes me think of stinky, sulfury smelling marshes. So I always picture the insides of our bodies being more like marshes where you have bacteria interacting with nutrients, interacting with water. And knowing that we need to drink water to improve our health is it's a really basic statement that many, many, many health educators, doctors, and even friends, but most importantly, I think usually partners or parents remind us often. It's kind of that nagging question. If you ever complain about feeling tired, I'm sure you've had a loved one say, well, how much water did you have today? And you hear it in that naggy voice because you know you should be drinking water. And sometimes it's just hard to remember or keep up with it. So when I make the recommendation to drink more water, I often get responses that include a long, drawn-out sigh. I know, I knew you were going to say that when you asked how much water I drink throughout the day. On occasions, I've even gotten eye rolls and skepticism at the idea that water would help solve the problems that we're working to improve. And I always just ask for patience and recommend that we just give it a shot to try to stay more hydrated over a period of days. I usually like to, if I'm making the recommendation to drink more water, I like to make an appointment with that person that I'm working with 5 days later, where we're just on the phone quickly for 5 minutes and I'm asking them how it's gone with drinking more water. And I find that that increases compliance with the recommendation because then my patients know, okay, Dr. Verdi is going to call me in 5 days and ask me how it's been with drinking water. And almost always, my patients notice a big difference with being hydrated. And there's kind of that light bulb moment of, oh, wow, this is the essential part of my health routine that I wasn't keeping up with. So even though it's a recommendation that seems so non-specific and generalized that it's hard to believe that it'll impact our own unique health concerns, as we'll learn today, dehydration can affect everyone in really unique ways. But it's so critically important for a number of reasons that we'll talk about. So we're going to go into the health promoting, anti-aging properties of staying adequately hydrated and the ways in which dehydration can derail our goals for healthy living. So if any of you have ever taken care of plants or gardened, you'll notice that within a few days to a week of accidentally forgetting to water a plant, depending on the type of plant, they'll start to wilt. This is because plants are also composed primarily of water, and the water helps to form the structure of the plant cells. So when hydrated, the cell walls are hard, and they have a lot of pressure from all of the water inside the cells, and that's called turgor. And when plants are deprived of water, their structure will change. The plant cell walls will actually shrink due to the reduced intracellular fluid. And this will cause the plant to wilt. The same thing happens with human cells that are chronically dehydrated. They actually shrink, and the shrinking of the cells will then send signals to our brain that we need to drink more water, and we'll experience the sensation of thirst. So I often recommend that for people who have a hard time staying hydrated, keep a plant next to your bed or at your desk in your office, and looking at that plant, when you notice it starts to wilt, will kind of serve as a reminder first that, okay, the plant needs watering, but then also you can ask yourself, when's the last time I really watered myself? Am I feeling like I'm wilting? Am I experiencing fatigue or difficulty focusing or any array of symptoms that we'll talk about soon? So the structure is also maintained from water, is also maintained in our joints. So a lot of research studies have found that when we are chronically dehydrated, the fluid that surrounds and nourishes our joints, it's called synovial fluid, is actually reduced. And with the reduction in that fluid serves as a cushion. So when it's reduced, people become more prone to chronic aches and pains in their joints, especially in their knees and their back. And a lot of people are unaware of the importance for hydration for joint health. So if you are struggling with chronic knee pain or back pain or episodes of knee pain or back pain, consider how much water you've drunk and consider talking to your physician about maybe increasing the amount of water you're drinking or assessing for dehydration. So water also helps to maintain homeostasis in our bodies. And homeostasis is a pretty big word. It describes the set of biochemical reactions that happen in our bodies on a cellular level that keep us alive, breathing, and active. So in order to be alive, we need coordination between a lot of different complex systems in our body, from the cellular level to the tissue and organ level. We need communication between our organs and our brain, which happens through our nerves, hormones, neurotransmitters, and this communication happens in part due to water acting as a transporter of these chemicals and hormones in our blood and neurotransmitters in our GI tract and brain. And water also provides an electronic gradient that allows electrolytes to become more active and cause signaling between our muscles and our nerves, which are electronic parts of our systems. So water helps with the electricity of our body that keeps us animated and moving. And water also helps with regulating our body temperature. So anytime we've overheated, we will sweat water out, and water helps with energy use. It also helps to transport nutrients from different foods into our bodies, and our bodies use water in the production of enzymes to absorb nutrients in our digestive tract. And our blood is made up of water that transports nutrients to our tissues. And water even helps to remove waste from our body through our kidneys, our sweat, and our GI tract. And the balance between all of these different processes is called homeostasis. And notice that water is the main driving force behind a lot of this. Our bodies are so reliant on water that even a drop of 1 to 2% can impact our body in ways ranging from our mood to our thinking to our energy levels. And we've all probably noticed the importance of hydration when struggling with stomach bugs. I think that's the most common one, where we're unable to stay hydrated because of water loss through diarrhea and vomiting. And often people will notice that they're really tired, they have headaches, and the fatigue is unreal. And that's because of the dehydration. The most common causes of acute sudden onset dehydration is infections that cause the vomiting, diarrhea, loss of appetite. People will notice with that acute dehydration that they'll have increases in their heartbeat, headaches, dizziness, fatigue, and lightheadedness. If dehydration becomes severe, people can actually suffer from confusion, delirium, seizures, and eventual death. But there's a chronic, more long-term form of dehydration, which is what we'll focus on today. And it doesn't cause immediate, noticeable health effects that would require somebody to need immediate medical attention. But the effect of chronic dehydration can build up over time and affect our health. And right now, it's estimated that 75% of Americans suffer from chronic dehydration. So that's 3 out of 4 people. It's a pretty big issue when it comes to the ways in which it impacts our health. So the elderly tend to be a population that struggles with chronic dehydration. And this is because people who have dementia may not drink enough water. We're also learning that elderly experience thirst differently as they age than they do when they're younger. So when we're dehydrated, the changes in the pressure of blood in our arteries, and then the changes that happen at a cellular level, even the way in which our taste buds taste our meals and determine how much salt is in our meals, signal to our brain, okay, we need to drink more water, and signal thirst. But there's a couple of problems with thirst. So number one, a lot of people tend to confuse thirst for hunger. So I'll often hear this when I'm working with a patient as them saying, yeah, so I had a good meal. I did what you recommended. I had a combination of fat, protein, and carbs for breakfast. But then 2 hours later, I was hungry, and I just feel like I always have to eat snacks in between my meals, and I'm never full, and I never feel satisfied. And when I hear that, what I'm actually usually hearing is I'm dehydrated. I'm not drinking enough water. My body is craving something, and I'm not sure what it's craving. I can't pinpoint it. So I'm trying all of these snacks when really it may just be that they're not drinking enough water. So in this case, I'll often recommend that people drink water in between meals, especially if they're still feeling hungry a few hours after eating. And usually when you start to drink more water, you'll start urinating more. It's a common change that happens as the kidneys get used to the adequate amounts of water that you're drinking, and eventually that will normalize out. But examining if hydration could be an impact on how satisfied you feel after meals and how often you need to snack is important, and it's a very simple fix. Easy peasy. Again, make sure to talk to your medical provider before you make any big changes to your health routine, but that's one issue I see, is people confuse thirst for hunger. Number two, a lot of people don't drink water because they're not sure when to drink it, and I understand this. There's some traditional wisdom out there that recommends against drinking water during meals because there's the belief that it'll dilute your digestive enzymes and make it hard for your body to digest food. So I know that there's traditional forms of medicine that really believe this, and it's possible that it can have an impact for certain people, but I think that this couldn't be further from the truth right now when we're dealing with 75% of Americans struggling with dehydration. Our bodies actually have more difficulty producing digestive enzymes when we're in a dehydrated state because the enzymes require fluid to travel. And also our digestive tract is made up of mucosa that also requires adequate hydration. So in order for our GI tract to function adequately, we need to be hydrated. And being dehydrated may be why you're not digesting your food as well. So if somebody really struggles with dehydration, I'll often recommend that they drink water before or during their meals, just to remember to drink, to have that glass of water with each meal. But it's up to preference. So I prefer to eat food at mealtimes and drink water in between meals. But other people find that they feel better when they're drinking water with meals. So it's up to preference. I just wanted to dispel that myth today. So I'm Dr. Verdi, and you're listening to Seeking Wellness Radio, Our Bodies Explained. Today, we're focusing on hydration as one of the main foundations of our health. And this is a live broadcast. Feel free to call in with any questions you may have. The number to call is 203-336-9756. So, as I was saying before, not everybody experiences thirst. It turns out that as we age, we become less thirsty, to the degree where when children, young adults, adults and elderly were all deprived of the same amount of water for the same period of time, and they all had the same level of physiological dehydration. And then they were put in front of an array of beverages, ranging from water to delightfully flavored water and beverages. Younger people drank twice as much as elderly. And a lot of the elderly folk weren't even feeling thirsty or like they wanted to drink water at all. The average elderly person drinks around 4 cups of water a day. And this is because of the low level of thirst. But it's really important for elderly people to drink regular amounts of water throughout the day. And if there was a lot of sweating happening, to increase salt intake, because when you sweat, you lose salt. Because a lot of the times, elderly people, when they're dehydrated, may have sudden hypotension, which is when suddenly the blood pressure goes low, for example, when you go from sitting to standing. Or dehydration can occur before stroke, or that abnormal fatigue from dehydration can lead to falls, and especially the hypotension, the low blood pressure can lead to falls and dizziness. And all of these things can eventually lead to hospitalization. Or let's say an elderly person is dehydrated and then they get a stomach bug. So they were dehydrated before and now they're rapidly deteriorating because that stomach bug is worsening their dehydration. So according to current recommendations, it's important for elderly individuals to continue drinking water, even if they're not feeling thirsty, to try to reach a certain goal of a certain amount of water every day. Again, dehydration is has unique effects on everybody, and it's important to get clearance from your doctor in terms of how much water you should be drinking and how quickly you should be increasing your water, especially if you have medications on board or cardiovascular disease. So metabolically, there's a difference between the water content in muscle and fat. So muscle is actually 70 to 75% water, while fat is 10 to 40% water. So I always notice that when I recommend people to start exercising, especially body weight exercise, lifting weights, they'll notice that they're gaining weight initially. They're noticing that they're fitting into clothes better, but they're also gaining weight. And that's often because they're putting on muscle. And so that muscle is holding on to water. And so there's that weight gain that happens through an increase in muscle activity, especially when we're building muscle. There's tiny tears that happen in our muscles as they grow. And those tears tend to cause inflammation, a good kind of inflammation, but we'll see an increase in water uptake. Usually it takes around 2 weeks for that water to normalize once people start exercising. But that's usually why if you're starting to exercise and you're keeping an eye on the scale and wanting to make sure you're losing weight, that's usually why you see the increase in weight. It actually turns out that people who have more muscle actually have a higher tolerance to alcohol compared to people who have more fat and less muscle. And this is actually because of the differences in water content between muscle and fat. So one part of your tolerance to alcohol may be related to your body composition and how much muscle versus fat you have. So when we're dehydrated, our blood volume decreases, and that's why we notice that we feel more dizzy, or we may have low blood pressure with dehydration. And the osmolality, which is the amount of salts in our blood, increases. And this signals to our kidneys. They'll sense this change, and their role is to maintain healthy circulation through our body. Our hearts pump blood through our body, but our kidneys' job is to make sure that we have a good amount of blood in our blood vessels to maintain blood pressure. So when the kidneys notice the change in pressure of blood through our kidneys or the change of electrolytes in our blood, they'll release hormones that cause our body to retain water and reduce the amount of water we lose through urination. So our kidneys, they do this job. They keep us alive by performing this job. And our kidneys function better when we have the amount of water that we need every day, and we're not stressing our kidneys by drinking too little water, because the kidneys utilize energy to maintain this fluid balance in our bodies. And when the kidneys become stressed from excess salt or not enough blood, it can put a lot of strain on the kidney function over a long period of time. And some people can be more prone to developing urinary kidney stones. So stages of dehydration. So mild dehydration, there's not a lot of big symptoms outside of dizziness and fatigue. And that happens, the fatigue happens at around 5 to 8% of water loss. But if we ever have anything more than 10%, water loss will experience severe thirst, physical, and mental deterioration. Mild dehydration over the long term, can cause changes in our brain functioning. So a lot of people notice decreased concentration, decreased alertness, and short-term memory. And research has also found that things like arithmetic, visual motor tracking, psychomotor skills, all of these things that blend thinking with our body's ability to perform tasks could be impacted by mild dehydration. And it's also been found that dehydration can affect genders differently. So in women, changes in mood and alertness and energy levels, and then I want to hone in on overall happiness, can be affected by fluid deprivation. So for some women, they find that when they're hydrated, they feel happier, and that they can start feeling unhappy when they're dehydrated. And I'm sure there are some female listeners out there who have those days where you're wondering why everything's so hard. It's so hard to do the simplest tasks, and you might have a mild headache or difficulty focusing. I've definitely had days like that. And there was another study that found that after losing just 1.3% of water, women noticed that they had more headaches and difficulty focusing, whereas men seem to feel more tense and anxious and tired, and they notice that they're not able to remember things as well after losing 1.5% of their water. So there's this ritual that I have with my twin brother that we started when we were 19 years old. So when we were growing up, our mom, who was an RN, would always talk to us about the importance of being fed and watered. So if we were ever irritable or struggling or starting to pick fights with her, or finding homework was difficult, or fighting with each other, she would go through a checklist. When's the last time you ate? When's the last time you drank? Could you be tired? So she would always address the physiological things first. And over time, my brother and I started to notice that we would experience lulls in energy, and we would need to nap or relax. But we started to instead have water parties during those times where we felt like we needed to nap. And water parties were when we would get cups of water and include whoever was with us, so our parents or friends. We would all get cups of water, cheers to health, and then guzzle the water down. And we drink around 3 or 4 glasses of water. And then within an hour, we would notice an almost immediate improvement in our mood, our happiness, our productivity. So I still have water parties now. Sometimes I'll have them with my husband, with my friends, even in clinic in between patients. If I start to feel tired, I'll go out and have a water party by myself by the water cooler. So dehydration. So there, a lot of people notice that when they're dehydrated, they struggle with headaches, chronic headaches. And there have been studies that have looked into migraines, and could chronic dehydration cause people to develop migraines, or could it cause people to develop chronic headaches? It turns out that for migraines, it's still questionable. The studies are questionable, whereas for chronic headaches, it has been found that staying adequately hydrated can reduce the number of chronic headaches that people have, but it can also resolve headaches within 30 minutes of drinking water. So water parties might be a good idea, but dehydration can also affect our dental health. So our saliva. So remember I was talking about how digestion can be improved by staying hydrated. It looks like Valerie's having a water party now. That's exciting. Remember I was talking about how our digestive enzymes, if we're not drinking enough water, our digestive function can be impacted because we need fluid to transport our enzymes and produce our hydrochloric acid in our stomach. So in our mouths, that's actually the first phase of digestion, is when you smell, look at, or think about a food. That's when the cascade of digestion starts in our body. And usually the cognitive thinking smelling food causes our mouths to produce more saliva. And when we're dehydrated, saliva production is affected. We don't produce enough saliva. And saliva contains enzymes that help with the initial breakdown of carbohydrates. But saliva also helps to maintain phosphate and calcium levels in our mouth, protects our teeth from decay, cleans our mouth out. Our mouth is constantly being flushed by our saliva after we eat, and we're constantly swallowing the saliva and sampling what's in our mouth, the type of bacteria that's in our mouth. So saliva is essential for preventing tooth decay. And if anybody's struggled with dry mouth, there tends to be a high degree of periodontal disease with chronic dry mouth. So it turns out dehydration can actually boost saliva production and boost our dental health. If you're just tuning in, I'm Dr. Verdi, and you're listening to Seeking Wellness Radio, Our Bodies Explained. And today's episode is all about hydration. So dry eye is also affected by hydration status. So we may be noticing right now that our air is really dry because of the heating systems that we're using and also the cold, dry winter air. And this became evident to me, the importance of hydration for eye health, when I was in ND school. In between my second and third year, I had my first set of board exams. That summer, I was also planning a conference on integrative medicine and starting clinical work. So I was juggling a lot of different things. And I decided to start drinking coffee that year. And I also decided to start Bikram yoga. Now, mind you, I was going to school in Arizona, in Phoenix, where it's 120 degrees most days. So within a few weeks of this routine of drinking coffee and going to Bikram yoga a couple of times a week, I developed eye pain. And I went to the eye doctor because I couldn't figure out what was causing my eye pain. And the eye doctor suspected that it might be my contact lens solution and gave me another one. And that didn't really fix anything. And it wasn't until weeks later, when I stopped doing the Bikram yoga, that my eyes stopped hurting. And I realized that the combination of Bikram yoga plus the 120 degree dry heat in Arizona and the coffee habit was causing me to experience dehydration. And in Arizona, just the simple act of walking from a building to your car dehydrates you. That's how dry the air is. And you don't notice that you're sweating. Because it just evaporates off of you before you can sweat. So it was almost impossible for me to regain hydration in the Arizona heat. But this was a huge moment in my life, what I call a no-duh moment in my life, where I realized that I wasn't hydrating my body enough to help my eyes stay healthy. And I was using my eyes a lot between being in clinic and studying for boards. And so that was causing chronic dry eye, which for some people can cause eye pain. And if you look at our blood vessels to our eyes, they are tiny. If you're home, Google it and look and see how small they are. I remember dissecting the eye in cadaver lab, and I was blown away by how small the vessels are. And this is one of the most important sensory organs. And when we have changes in our cardiovascular system, the way that blood flows through these tiny vessels of our eyes, it can impact our eyesight and cause rapid deterioration. But from a Chinese medicine perspective, eye conditions can be related to a deficiency of blood. And deficiency could mean in terms of the nutrition of the blood, the qi in the blood, reduced blood flow or low circulation. And so it's possible that I was causing a blood deficiency through this dehydration. And so anytime I notice, so remember I was mentioning earlier in the show, everybody experiences dehydration in different ways. Well, for me, I usually notice it first with my eyes. So that's my signal to examine how much water I've been drinking. But mild dehydration can also cause increases in the stress hormone cortisol, which we've talked about a number of times in this show. So cortisol is released when our bodies are under stress. And it turns out that being chronically dehydrated causes that stress signal in our body. So sometimes I'll have patients who are sitting in the office with me, and I'll see signs of stress when I'm talking to them related to the various things that are going on in their bodies. But then I'll ask them, are you stressed right now? Is anything stressful going on in your life, socially or at work or anything? And they'll say, no, everything's perfect. That's why I'm here. I can't figure out what's causing these symptoms for me. But dehydration could be one of those players that's causing chronic stress, and it's not linked to anything emotional. It's the pure physiological process of being dehydrated. It's a stressful experience for the body. So a lot of people focus on adrenal support and how to support their adrenal glands if they feel like they're burnt out. Well, I often just start with the foundation, as we've been talking about the last few months. So what's the mindset like? Is this person sleeping enough? Could they be dehydrated? Those are the things I like to look at before I start to hone in on any specific areas of their health that may be indicating burnout. So our metabolism is also stimulated through staying hydrated. If you're listening right now, this is a live broadcast. I'm Dr. Verdi. And if you have any questions about hydration, staying hydrated, please call in. I'm sure other listeners have similar questions. The number is 203-336-9756. So yeah, our metabolisms are stimulated through staying hydrated. So in one study where men and women were asked to drink an additional 2 liters of water a day, the metabolism increased by roughly 30%, where men were increasing the amount of calories they were burning from fat, while women preferentially burned calories from carbohydrates. So drinking more water may actually stimulate the metabolism. And water also may be impacting our longevity in ways that we don't understand yet. So there was one study that found that people who drank 5 or more glasses of water a day were 41% less likely to die from heart attacks compared to people who drank less than 2 glasses. This might have more to do with the lifestyles of people who tend to value water over other beverages like soda, coffee, tea, but it was also found that staying hydrated could reduce the risk of colon cancer by 45% and bladder cancer by 50%, and the possibility that adequate hydration could affect breast cancer too. This may have to do with the fact that water helps with detoxification of substances. It helps our colon and kidneys clear out toxins. That's a possibility. There has to be more studies, but that's immediately where my mind went, especially with all the solvents that we're exposed to in our workplace and outside. It's possible that those solvents are more easily cleared when people are in a hydrated state, cleared out through the urine or bowel movements. So the big question I get from my patients is how much water they should be drinking. And this is a hard one for me to answer because we're all unique. Like, different species of plants require different amounts of water to stay healthy and feel healthy. We're the same way. So the broad recommendation right now is that adults should be drinking around 8 glasses of water a day. But if you're an athlete, you may need more. If you eat a high salt diet, you may need more. There's actually a couple of cases that I've worked with, primarily with middle-aged men who have come in with high blood pressure and they've been on medication for it, or they're coming in because they have prehypertension and they want to address the prehypertension before having to go on medications. So for these cases, it's interesting because the blood pressure may be normal one day, and then it may be elevated the next day, normal the next day, elevated the next day. Or even within the same day, it may start out normal and then gradually get higher as the day goes on. And often, if there's these outlier numbers where the blood pressure's high, I will ask that individual, okay, walk me through your day. Tell me everything that happened today. What was different about today? And usually it takes a lot of questioning. I'm sure it almost feels like an interrogation, but I want to know what was unique about that day. And in a handful of cases, I've actually been able to identify what it was. So in one case, it was in Arizona. This patient had a huge bowl of pho, which is a soup that's made with noodles and brisket or a tendon, other types of meat. But then it also has this broth that's really high in salt. And this patient had the entire bowl of broth and then came for a follow-up visit. So he had the broth at lunchtime, came to see me at 5, and his blood pressure was through the roof. So for him, I said, okay, just go home, drink some water, wait an hour, drink some water, wait an hour, drink some water, wait an hour, and I'll call you at 8 tonight to see what your blood pressure is like. His blood pressure normalized. There was another case where this man was struggling with prehypertension, and then when he came into the office to see me, his blood pressure was elevated, and he had a few days of having normal blood pressure. So I felt like it really had something to do with what happened that day. And it turns out that he would take a huge thermos of water with him to work every day and drink it. And after a lot of discussing about what was different that day, I learned that he left his thermos at home. And so he didn't get any water that day. And so in some cases, our changes in blood pressure may be related to that one salty meal that we had that was just too much salt for our bodies to handle. Or the fact that we're used to having a certain amount of water every day, and then we didn't have that water that day. So that patient went home, drank water, waited an hour, drank water, waited an hour, and by the end of the evening, his blood pressure was normal again. So I like to recommend, if people are struggling with high blood pressure, take your blood pressure often. Try to notice trends. Try to figure out what it is that causes your blood pressure to get higher. And definitely make sure that you're being monitored by a medical provider as you're doing this, especially if you're on medication and your blood pressure is still elevated. So another question I get is, can you trust your thirst? So some of my patients say, I'm just not thirsty. And I feel like in order to be healthy, you just have to trust your hunger and trust your thirst. But oftentimes when people are dehydrated, they just don't feel thirsty. And once they're hydrated, they notice that they start to feel thirsty. So I would recommend focusing on hydration over a couple of weeks and then seeing if you can figure out what your baseline level of water needs are based on how you're feeling when you start to notice fatigue or headaches or anything like that. Measuring hydration status, so it can happen, there's a couple of ways to do it. So one way some health experts recommend is by looking at your fluctuation in body weight day to day. So weigh yourself the same time every morning without drinking water after you've peed to see what your weight is. And then if you have a change greater than 1% from your body weight, then you may be over or under hydrated. So I actually wanted to experiment with this. So after I learned about it, using your body weight, I decided to not drink water for a full day outside of like a couple of glasses and then the water that I was getting from my meals. And then I also did my high intensity workout. And the next morning, I had lost 3 pounds. And that was all water weight. So sometimes I'll have patients that say, I had this meal and then I gained 4 pounds. It just feels, I feel like that meal just tipped me over the edge. Well, it's possible it did, but it may have just modified the amount of water that you were retaining. When we see those fluctuations happen on a day-to-day level, it's more reflective of how hydrated or dehydrated we are. Another way to look at hydration is our urine-specific gravity, which tells us how concentrated our urine is. The more concentrated our urine is, it means we're less hydrated. And so this could be a reflection of immediate hydration status, not over an extended period of time. But that's a simple test you could get done at your doctor's. It's a urine test. Other signs of hydration. So we'll see clear pee or light yellow pee. Dark urine may be a sign of dehydration. Scanty urine, so if you're peeing a very small amount, could be a sign of dehydration. Just a note, if you're taking B vitamins, it does cause our urine to turn yellow, but it shouldn't be a super, super bright yellow color if you're hydrated. So staying hydrated, you'll see more of a diluted yellow color on your B vitamins. And then assess for symptoms of dehydration. Do your eyes feel dry? Does your mouth feel dry? Are you struggling with fatigue or changes in mood? Are you noticing those fluctuations in your weight from day to day? I'll see changes even in pre-diabetics with thirst, where they'll feel more thirsty and they'll urinate a lot more. And when we work on regulating blood sugar levels, those symptoms will go away. If you feel like you're urinating a lot or drinking a lot of water and you're always thirsty, definitely go get medical attention to see if there could be a medical condition underlying it. With prediabetes and diabetes, the problem that happens is that there's high amounts of sugar in our bloodstream because the sugar is unable to go into our cells, and then the sugar ends out leaving through our kidneys into our urine, and water will follow wherever sugar goes. So people with type 2 diabetes tend to be more dehydrated when it's uncontrolled. So tricks to staying hydrated. So around 70 to 80% of our water comes from beverages. The rest comes from food. So oftentimes we think about dehydrating foods like salty chips or salty meats, different foods like that. But there's also hydrating foods that can help boost our hydration. Cantaloupe, strawberries, watermelon, lettuce, celery, spinach, squash. These are all roughly 90 to 99% water. Oh, and pickles too. 90 to 99% water. So there's a lot of water in these foods. And it's interesting to think about how pregnant women oftentimes will crave fruits, fresh fruits, when they're pregnant. And that may be because fruits are a great source of water. They're a great source of electrolytes. And when you're pregnant, your blood volume increases so much because now you're also sustaining a placenta and a fetus. Other foods that are hydrating include yogurts, apples, grapes, oranges, carrots, cooked broccoli, pineapple, just any of those really juicy cucumbers, juicy fruits and vegetables are really helpful for boosting hydration. And I think it's partially because the foods contain a lot of water, but they also have electrolytes like potassium, magnesium, chloride, and we need those electrolytes to stay hydrated. So as we were talking about before, electrolytes, when they're mixed with water, they conduct electricity, and our bodies, our muscles, and our nerves depend on electrolytes in order to function. And when we have been sweating, we tend to lose our electrolytes, or certain foods can cause us to lose our electrolytes. And when we're focusing on hydration, we may need to boost our electrolyte levels by having an additional banana or avocado or any of these fresh fruits and dark leafy greens that help, that contain electrolytes. So simply drinking enough water sometimes doesn't mean that you're staying hydrated. You also have to look at your electrolyte levels, especially if you're experiencing symptoms of muscle twitching. That may be a sign that your electrolyte levels may be a little off. Now, if your electrolyte levels are really off, you'll experience things like confusion and delirium and seizures, and that would be a medical emergency. But on a day-to-day level, we may have smaller fluctuations in electrolytes linked to high-intensity exercise and not hydrating enough. So dehydration can happen from not drinking enough water, from chronically drinking too much alcohol or too much coffee, from salty foods, from hormone imbalances, especially pre-diabetes and diabetes, and even hot showers. If people are taking long hot showers, they could be sweating a lot and they may not be noticing, because it's hard to notice that you're sweating when you're in a hot shower. So my tips for staying hydrated, first is to look at the water that you're drinking. Make sure that it's clean water. So when you think of water, it's actually quite miraculous. It's been around for ages, and it's the same water that dinosaurs drank. And it's literally been all around the world. And that means, especially now, that there could be chemicals from our environment that may be dissolving into the water. So I like to recommend that people get water filters as their first step to staying hydrated. Activated carbon is one form of filtration. Carbon is very porous and spongy and will attract and trap chemicals inside it. Chloride and pesticides and solvents will also be trapped inside it. So I really like activated carbon filters. Reverse osmosis, that one doesn't filter out a lot of toxins. So I actually do tend to recommend the activated carbon filters. Now, I don't represent this company, but Berkey would be I have no affiliation with them, but Berkey would be a good company to look at for water filters, because about 99.5% of chemicals, including heavy metals and pesticides and microbes, are able to be filtered out using Berkey filters. So number two, what I recommend is that people get water bottles that they like. So I'm sure you have water bottles at home that you liked at one point, but you just don't feel like drinking from them anymore. If you want to stay hydrated, find a water bottle that you like that's the right size for you. If you travel a lot, look at the size of the mouth. Is it one that is easy for you to drink out of? Is it easy to clean? You may need to get a special sponge to clean it, because it's possible that you just don't feel like drinking from your water bottles when they get to a certain level of dirtiness. So make it as easy as possible for yourself to want to drink out of your water bottle, and commit to drinking from it a certain number of times a day. There's actually an app. There's a couple of apps that you can download that remind you on your phone to drink water a couple of hours every day. And it'll go off and remind you, and you can track how much water you're drinking, which might be a good way to get started with staying hydrated. Get more fruits and veggies in your diet. If you feel like you're dehydrated, fruits and vegetables, as we just talked about, is where we get 20 to 30% of our water. So if you're only having two or three servings of fruits or less a day, fruits and veggies, you may want to try making more soups and eating fruits as snacks. Have those water parties that I talked about. Get some herbal teas like nettles and chamomile that contain a lot of micronutrients and will help with hydration, and drink that throughout the day. Coconut water, emergency, those are good ways to boost our hydration status. One of my favorite recommendations, though, is some people think that water's too bland. They don't like drinking it. I personally love that the thing that's essential for our health is the least offensive thing ever. There's no flavor, taste, or anything to it. And that's the thing that we need to stay alive. But some people want flavor. So I'll recommend that they diffuse their water with slices of lemon or chunks of basil and mint and blueberries and strawberries and cucumbers. And there's so many different things you can add to your water to make it taste pleasant. And give that a shot if you feel like you need extra motivation to drink water throughout the day. So I'm hoping that today's episode inspired you to water yourselves. Be sure to talk to your medical provider about any changes you're going to make with the water that you're drinking. This is Dr. Verdee. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in on the fourth Saturday of next month for our next episode of Seeking Wellness Radio.